Slide 6. The Zazzle by Isaac Asimov. Continuing with Flight of Fancy on page 215. I said, "You can only go up about 4 feet, you know." "In here I can. Let's get outside." "Are you crazy? You don't want people to know you can fly. They'll take that anti-gravity thing away from you so scientists can study it, and you'll never be able to fly again. My friend is the only one who knows about it now, and it's secret." "Well, what am I going to do?" "Enjoy yourself flying around in the room." "That's not much." "Not much? How much could you fly 5 minutes ago?" My powerful logic was, as usual, convincing. I must admit that as I watched him move about freely and gracefully, within the rather unfragrant air of the limited confines of his not very large living room, I had a distinct urge to try it myself. I was not sure he would give up his anti-gravity device, however, and what was more, I had a strong suspicion it would not work for me. Azazel consistently refuses to do anything for me directly, on what he calls ethical grounds. His gifts, he says, in his idiotic fashion, are meant only to benefit others. I wish he didn't feel that way, or that others did. I have never been able to persuade the beneficiaries of my beneficence to enrich me noticeably. Balder finally came down upon one of his chairs and said complacently, "You mean I can do this because I believe?" "That's right," I said. "It's a flight of fancy." I rather liked the phrase, but Balder is wit deaf, if I may invent a term. He said, "See, George, it's much better to believe in science than in heaven and all that junk about angel wings." "Absolutely," I said. "Shall we stop off for dinner and then have a few drinks?"
"You bet,"
he said, and we had an excellent evening.
And yet, somehow, things did not go well. A settled melancholy seemed to cast its pall over Balder. He abandoned his ancient haunts and found new watering holes. I didn't mind. The new places were cut above the old ones and usually produced excellent dry martinis. But I was curious and asked.
"I can't argue with those dumbheads no more," said Balder glumly.
"I get the craving to tell them I can fly like an angel. So are they going to worship me? And would they believe me?"
"They believe all that crud about talking snakes and dames turning into salt. Fairy tales. Just fairy tales. But they wouldn't believe me. Not on your life.
So I just got to stay away from them. Even the Bible says, hang not out in the company of jerks, nor sit in the seat of the scornful."
And periodically he would burst out and say, "I can't just do it in my apartment. There's no room. I don't get the feel. I got to do it in the open air. I got to climb into the sky and go swooping around."
"You will be seen."
"I can do it at night."
"Then you'll crash into a hillside and be killed."
"Not if I go up real high."
"Then what'll you see at night? You might as well fly around in your room."
He said, "I'll find a place where there are no people."
"These days," I said, "where are there no people?"
My powerful logic always won the day, but he got more and more unhappy, and finally I didn't see him for several days.
He wasn't at home.
The taxi garage out of which he worked said he had taken a 2-week vacation that was coming to him, and no, they didn't know where he was. It wasn't that I minded missing out on his hospitality. At least I didn't mind much. But I was worried what he might be doing on his own with all this madness about swooping through the air. I found out eventually when he returned to his apartment and telephoned me.
I scarcely recognized his broken voice. And, of course, I came to him at once when he explained that he needed me badly. He sat in his room, dispirited and heartsick.
"George," he said, "I never should have done it."
"Done what, Balder?"
It poured out of him.
"You remember I said I wanted to find a place where there was no people?"
"I remember."
"So I got an idea. I took some time off when the weather forecast said there would be a bunch of bright sunny days, and I went and hired a plane. I went down to one of those airports where you can get a ride if you pay for it.
Like a taxi, only you fly."
I know, I said.
"I tell the guy to head out to the suburbs and fly around all the hip places. I said I wanted to look at the scenery. What I was gonna do was look around for some real empty places. And when I found one, I'd ask what it was, and then some weekend I'd come out there and fly like I really wanted to fly all my life."
"Balder," I said, "you can't tell from up in the sky. A place may look empty from up there, but be full of people."
And he said bitterly,
"What's the use of telling me that now?" He paused, shook his head, then went on.
"It was one of those real old-fashioned planes, open cockpit in front and open passenger seat in back, and I'm leaning way out so I can watch the ground and make sure there are no highways, no automobiles, no farmhouses. I take off my seatbelt so I can watch better. I mean, I can fly, so I'm not scared of being high in the air. Only I'm leaning way out, and the pilot don't know I'm doing that. And he makes a turn, and the airplane sort of leans in the direction I'm looking out, and before I can catch hold of something, I fall right out."
"Good heavens," I said. Balder had a can of beer at his side, and he paused to gulp at it thirstily.
He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, and he said,
"George, did you ever fall out of an airplane without a parachute?"
"No," I said. "Now that I think of it, I don't think I have ever done that."
"Well, try it some day," said Balder. "It's a funny feeling. I was caught all by surprise. For a while, I couldn't figure out what happened. It was just open air everywhere, and the ground was sort of turning around and then moving up and going over my head and around, and I kept saying to myself, 'What the heck's going on?' Then after a while, I can feel a wind, and it's blowing stronger and stronger, only I can't tell exactly from what direction. And then it sort of percolates in my head that I'm falling. I just says to myself, 'Hey, I'm falling.' And as soon as I say that, I can see I am, and the ground looks like it's below, and I'm going down fast, and I know I'm going to hit, and covering up my eyes isn't going to do me any good." Would you believe, George? All that time I never thought I could fly. I was too surprised. I could have been killed. But now, when I'm almost down there, I remember, and I say to myself, 'I can fly! I can fly!' It was like skidding in the air. It was like the air turning to a big rubber band that's attached to me on top and is pulling back so that I slow down and slow down. And when I'm about treetop high, I'm going real slow, and I'm thinking, 'Maybe now is the time to swoop.' But I feel sort of worn out, and there's just a tiny way to go, so I straighten out, slow down some more, and land on my feet with the tiniest, tiniest bump. And, of course, you're right, George. Everything looked empty when I was way up there. But when I got down to the ground, there was a whole crowd of people gathered around me, and there was a kind of church with a steeple nearby, which I guess I didn't make out from way up, what with the trees and all."
Balder closed his eyes, and for a while he contented himself with breathing heavily.
"What happened, Balder?" I asked finally.
"You'll never guess," he said.
"I don't want to guess," I said. "Just tell me."
He opened his eyes and said, "They'd all come out of the church, some real Bible-believing church, and one of them falls to his knees and lifts up his hands and yells, 'A miracle, a miracle!'
and all the rest do the same. You never heard such a noise. And one guy comes up, a short, fat guy, and says, I'm a doctor. Tell me what happened. I can't think what to tell him. I mean, how do you explain how come you're shooting down from the sky? They're gonna holler, I'm an angel soon. So I tell the truth. I say, I accidentally fell out of an airplane. And they all start hollering, a miracle, again. The doctor says, did you have a parachute? How am I going to say I had a parachute when there ain't none around me? So I say no. And he said, you were seen falling and then slowing up and landing gently. And then another guy, it turned out he was the preacher of the church, said in a kind of deep voice, it was the hand of God upholding him. Well, I can't take that, so I said, it was not. It was an anti-gravity thing I got. And the doctor says to me, a what? I said, an anti-gravity thing. And he laughs and says, I'd go for the hand of God if I were you. Like, I'm coming up with a gag. By that time, the pilot has landed his airplane and come up, and he's white as a sheet, saying, it wasn't my fault. The damn fool unbuckled his safety belt. And he sees me standing there, and he damn near faints. He said, how did you get here? You didn't have no parachute. And everyone starts singing some kind of psalm or other, and the preacher takes the pilot's hand and tells him it's the hand of God, and I've been saved because I meant to do some great work in the world, and how everyone in his congregation who was here this day were now surer than ever that God was on his throne and working away like anything to do his good work, and all sorts of stuff like that. He even got me to thinking about it. I mean, that I was being saved for something great. Then newspaper people came and some more doctors. I don't know who called them. And I was asked questions till I thought I would go crazy. But the doctors stopped them and carried me off to a hospital for an examination. I was stupefied at this. They actually put you in a hospital. Never left me alone for a minute. The local paper had me in headlines, and some scientist came over from Rutgers or somewhere, and he kept asking me about it. I said I had this anti-gravity, and he laughed. I said, do you think it was a miracle then? You, a scientist? And he said, there are lots of scientists who believe in God, but not one scientist who believes anti-gravity is possible. Then he said, but show me how it works, Mr. Anderson, and I may change my mind. And, of course, I couldn't make it work, and I still can't. To my horror, Balder covered his face with his hands and began to weep. I said, pull yourself together, Balder. It must work. He shook his head and said in muffled tones, no, it don't. It only works if I believe, and I don't believe no more. Everyone says it's a miracle. No one believes in anti-gravity. They just laugh at me. And the scientist said the thing was just a piece of metal with no power source and no controls, and anti-gravity was impossible according to Einstein, the relativity guy. George, I should have done like you said. Now I'll never fly again because I lost my faith. Maybe it wasn't never anti-gravity, and it was all God working through you for some reason. I'm beginning to believe in God, and I've lost my faith. Poor fellow. He never did fly again. He gave me back the device, which I returned to Azazel. Eventually, Balder quit his job, went back to that church near which he came down, and he now works as a deacon there. They take care of him very kindly, because they think the hand of God was upon him. I looked at George intently, but his face, as always when he tells me of Azazel, bore a look of simple candor. I said, George, did this happen recently? Just last year. With all this fuss about a miracle and newspapermen and headlines in the papers and the rest? That's right. Well, then, can you explain how it is that I've never seen anything about it in the papers?
George reached into his pocket and extracted the $5.82 that represented the change he had carefully collected after I had paid for lunch with a 20 and a 10. He isolated the bill and said, $5 says I can explain that. I didn't hesitate a moment and said, $5 says you can't. He said, you only read the New York Times, right?
Right, I said.
And the New York Times, with due regard to what it considers its intellectual readership, places all reports of miracles on page 31, in some obscure place near the advertisements for bikini bathing suits, right? Possibly, but what makes you think I wouldn't see it even in a small, obscure news item? Because, said George triumphantly, it is well known that except for some scare headlines, you see nothing in the newspaper. You go through the New York Times looking only to see if your name is mentioned anywhere. I thought a while, then let him have the other $5. What he said wasn't true, but I know it's probably the general opinion, so I decided there was no use arguing. Acknowledgements. One Eyed of Song appeared in the April 1982 issue of the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, F&SF. Copyright 1982 by Mercury Press, Incorporated. The Smile That Loses appeared in the November 1982 issue of F&SF. Copyright 1982 by Mercury Press, Incorporated. To the Victor appeared in the July 1982 issue of Isaac Asimov's Science Fiction Magazine, IASFM. Copyright 1982 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. The Dim Rumble appeared in the September 18, 1982 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1982 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. Saving Humanity appeared in the September 1983 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1983 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. A Matter of Principle appeared in the February 1984 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1983 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. The Evil Drink Does appeared in the May 1984 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1984 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. Writing Time appeared in the July 1984 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1984 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. Dashing Through the Snow appeared in the mid-December 1984 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1984 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. Logic is Logic appeared in the August 1985 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1985 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. He Travels the Fastest appeared in the November 1985 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1985 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. The Eye of the Beholder appeared in the January 1986 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1985 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. More Things in Heaven and Earth appeared in a pamphlet, Science Fiction by Isaac Asimov. Copyright 1986 by Nightfall, Incorporated. The Mind's Construction appeared in the October 1986 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1986 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. The Fights of Spring appeared in the February 1987 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1986 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. Galatea appeared in the mid-December 1987 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1987 by Davis Publications, Incorporated. Flight of Fancy appeared in the May 1988 issue of IASFM. Copyright 1988 by Davis Publications, Incorporated.